This week on Life Matters, we're marking the 10th anniversary of the Black Saturday bushfires. In a moment, you're going to hear from Ella Holcombe. She was in Melbourne when the fires broke out, but her parents were at Kinglake, defending the home she and her twin brothers had grown up in. Here she shares her own story, as well as reading from a fictionalised picture book she's written for children to mark the anniversary. It's called The House on the Mountain, and it's illustrated by David Cox.
Hello, my name's Ella Holcombe and I grew up in Kinglake. My parents' names were Carol and David Holcombe. My dad was from San Diego in California and moved out to Australia in the late 70s there was a wave of high school teachers who came out. And so he and my mum met teaching at Layla Secondary College. So when I was born, my parents brought me up to an empty block basically with a very small caravan on it, and we lived there while mum and dad built the shed, lived in the shed for a couple years while they were building their house. The house was this beautiful mud brick house that they built themselves with their friends, timber ceilings, big windows that looked down onto the bush, and wooden floorboards, big heavy old red velvet moth-eaten curtains, and big leather armchairs, and just a beautiful house. I guess they just liked the area, liked the bush. The day before the fire comes seems just like any other. School starts again tomorrow and another hot day stretches out in front of us. In the morning, Mum closes all the windows and pulls the curtains across, trying to keep the heat out. But by lunchtime, outside and inside feel the same. The tired old fan blows warm air around the kitchen, and everything is heavy and still. My twin brothers and I shake off the stillness and disappear into the bush. We chase skinks, poke jumping jack nests, and race down the hill through the dry bracken, Ruby leading the way. Suddenly I realise how far we are from home, but Dad always says, "If you get lost, just head back up the hill." And sure enough, I can still see the roof of our house over the trees. We did a lot of just running wild in the bush and a lot of pretend play, pretending that we were shipwrecked and building cubbies. And we used to feel like we were a very, very long way away from the house when we'd go on these adventures. But I was looking at the little track that we used to walk down on, and it's probably less than 50 metres from the house. So we just felt like we're in this vast world and very, very far away and free. But we were actually quite close to the house most of the time. When I wake again, the day is hotter than any I've ever felt. "No school today, sweetie," Dad says. "Too hot." He doesn't look like he's slept much either. Mum runs us a cold bath, and me and the boys muck around for ages, drenching the bathroom. Mum and Dad go back and forth between the yard and the kitchen, clearing branches and hovering by the radio, turning up the volume as the wind starts to howl outside. The phone rings again and again. Suddenly Mum appears. Her face looks strange. "There's a fire coming," she says. "We need to move quickly." Mum and Dad start packing bags, grabbing woolen blankets, the first aid kit, torches, and then the photo albums. Dad puts Ruby on her lead and ties her up near the back door. My chest feels hollow, like a birdcage. I remember being aware that we did actually have these bags, like I've described in the book, with the first aid kit and the woolen blankets. As we got older, we became more aware of the things that Mum and Dad were doing in preparation for fire season every year. Dad had sprinklers on the roof. He had a fire pump that he would test every summer. And my parents also went to the CFA meetings in Kinglake and were part of a fire tree in our road, which was like all the different neighbours in the street would call each other if there was any fire danger in the area. So I was aware, but it wasn't something that we grew up being afraid of. It was just one of those things that, you know, those things as a child that adults will take care of. Yeah. The drive down the mountain hides away in the back of my memories. There is the fierce wind, the crashing of things hitting the car, the skidding of tyres, crying, Dad swearing, and smoke. Everywhere the smell of smoke. On the day of the fires, my partner and I were at his parents' place in Ivanhoe because they have a pool. I remember it was very, very hot, and I remember just, you know, being in and out of the pool. We're watching a movie. Yeah, it was V for Vendetta with Natalie Portman. It's a funny thing to remember. And a lot of the rest of the day I don't actually remember. I just remember it was very hot, very windy, just horrible weather, obviously. And at some point my brothers and I got in contact and became aware that there were fires in the area. So we're on the CFA website and kind of on the phone to each other. And I can't remember whether I spoke to my dad or not, but I spoke to my mum a couple times, I think. I remember very little about our earlier conversations in the day, but the last conversation, well, wasn't really a conversation. The last time I spoke to her, she just said, "We're in really big trouble, I've got to go," and hung up. So at some point, my brothers and I and my partner packed the car up and drove up to, well, the intention was to drive up to King Lake to help Mum and Dad defend the house, because that we knew that that was their plan. But luckily the roadblocks were already in place by the time we got to Whittlesea, so we were stopped at the bottom of the mountain. And then we just kind of hung around with everyone else. Yeah, just watching. Like, we could, as described in the book, we could see the top of the mountain just on fire. In town, Mum buys us hot chips, but no one eats any. The sky looks strange, dark and glowing, and there is a distant roaring sound, like an aeroplane approaching. We walk to the oval, and from there we can see the whole mountain, covered in fire. In the evening, we go to the community centre next to the oval. There are dogs tied up everywhere outside, and cats in crates or loose in the back seats of cars. Lots of kids from school are here too, and the twins run around like wild things. So after hanging around in Whittlesea for a couple hours, we just drove home back to our share house in Brunswick because there was nothing else that we could do. The fire was Saturday, late afternoon, evening, so all of Sunday and all of Monday, I've actually got very little memory of what we did or what happened. I think we might have gone up to Whittlesea again. I think there was a place where you could give the names of people who you were looking for. But yeah, very little memory of what we did. And then very late Monday night, the police came to the house, our place in Brunswick, and told us that Mum and Dad had died, yeah. When I wake, it's light outside and my mouth tastes like dust. "What do you mean, gone?" I hear Mum whisper. There's a pause. I stay very still. "It's gone, love," Dad whispers. "The fire got it." I close my eyes again, my heart pounding. I can see our house in the blackness, surrounded by trees. I dig my knuckles into my closed eyes, trying to stop the image from disappearing. From memory, it was 1 to 2 weeks until we were able to go up to the block for the first time. I don't think I have actual memories from that day. I mean, I remember what it looked like very early on, and we have photos of what it looked like early on, but that first day up, I don't have actual memories, no. But it, I just remember it looked so unfamiliar and alien, just a place so familiar to me that I'd known all my life, just looked completely different, just completely bald. But in the months following the fires, we did start having these pretty wonderful working bees. We were joined by lots and lots of friends and family. So we had these like huge flat metal trays, and we were there like literally sifting through the ashes looking for any bits of pottery or metal. Well, they were basically the things that survived. At first we kept pretty much everything that we found, like crazy people. So we found coins, cutlery, we found pots and pottery. Mum and Dad had a big collection of pottery. And also one of my brothers made a lot of amazing pottery when he was in late high school. I think because we had nothing physically left, it was like any tiny bits that we, like, kind of physical evidence that we could find were very important. And as I said, like at the start, we kept everything. And as years have gone by, we've kind of culled a bit. We've, you know, been like, what are we doing with this huge box of rusted metal? We don't need it. So, but we still have the things that are really special. On weekends, we sometimes go back up the mountain with Mum and Dad. One day we have to wear paper masks and bright orange suits, and we watch as huge trucks swing at the remains of our house with their claws. They knock it into smaller and smaller piles before loading it up and driving it away. The rain turns the ash to grey sludge that clumps on our boots. Sometimes it's hard to fall asleep. I miss the sound of rain on the tin roof, the smell of dirt and gum leaves. I can still see our house on the mountain, strong and tall, with its triangle roof and mud brick walls. Sometimes I wake terrified from some forgotten dream, and other times I'm woken by one of my brothers crying out for Mum. There's something inside me that's bigger than fear or sadness. It has no words, no shape, and it turns and twists. In my class, there are two kids who don't come back. And in assembly, we talk about all the kids and teachers and families who will never come back. As the 10-year anniversary began to approach, I felt a strong pull to write something in time for that. And I didn't intentionally set out to write a children's book, but it's just kind of how it came out, I think. It was a way of writing that allowed me to kind of pay homage to the amazing childhood that we had. So it's a bit of a thank you to my mum and dad, obviously, for our childhood. And I grew up surrounded by the most amazing picture books. My mum had this really lovely relationship with a woman at, I think it was called Small Print. It's a children's bookstore that used to be in Carlton, I think. And she would go down each year for Christmas, and this lady would say, oh, hi, you know, Ella would be ready for this now, and Patrick would enjoy this. And yeah, and I just remember that feeling of getting lost in another world of a beautifully illustrated book. After the fires, we were very insular, I'd say, in our grief, like very self-centered almost is not the right word. But as the years went by, you know, we were able to see the bigger picture more. And especially writing this book now, I was more able to think about all the other people who'd been affected and the families who'd been affected, and even families who hadn't, you know, lost members but who might have gone through an experience such as what's in this book. And yeah, I wanted to write something to that as well. I never considered writing my actual story. I had no desire to write a memoir or anything, and once I realised that I did want to write a children's book, it was very clear that it needed to be a different story, a more hopeful story, yeah. In the mornings, the fog rolls up the hill just like it used to. Mum digs over the soil in her old garden beds. Shoots of green are sprouting all the way up the tree trunks, and a few of Mum's plants poke their heads out of the blackened ground. Whenever she discovers one, she calls for us to come and look. Dad says our new house might even be ready by the end of summer. In the evenings, while he cooks dinner, we do our homework at the plastic camping table outside, surrounded by the smell of dirt and gum leaves. At night we can hear the wombats snuffling and scratching next to the caravan, and sometimes an owl calling out into the blackness. We've been very lucky in a way, I think, because my two brothers and I have always been on the same page in terms of the block. There's never been any question that we would sell it or not keep it. So, and then in order to keep it, it made sense to build something on it eventually. So that's what we've just started doing in the last year. The areas that were fire affected are divided up into the different bushfire attack levels or bell levels, and I think it goes up to 4 or 5, and then there's what's called the flame zone, and we were of course in the flame zone. So I think something like a third of the cost of our house is these massive bushfire shutters that we have to have. I saw the house recently and it has walls and it has a frame, so I have no idea how long it will take until it's finished, but maybe by the end of this year, that would be wonderful. I don't really have any strong emotions about this new house itself. My connection's always, I think, been more to the block itself. And these are just new things that we're putting on it. The connection's more to the land and the bush. I like to remember Mum and Dad when they would have their morning and afternoon tea time. It was very strictly observed, especially on the weekends. So cups of coffee, newspapers, toast or biscuits, and just outside on the little veranda area outside the kitchen. And Mum in the garden, and she was kind of renowned for her daffodils, like kind of a crazy amount of daffodils actually. And every spring she'd pick them, and the kitchen and the laundry would just be filled with like buckets of bunches and bunches of daffodils that she'd organise and take down and give her colleagues at the school she taught at. And Dad was just, he was real goofy and really funny, and I used to teach piano up there on the weekends, and the room where the piano was right next to the kitchen, and he'd often be in there cooking, and he'd just be a bit of a fool. Like he'd just be there like making faces at me, like when my students couldn't see me, or like he liked to like sharpen the knives kind of on this knife sharpener thing, and he'd like do it in time to the song that they were playing. So he's just a big goofball, but yeah, just super, super loving, both of them. I just remember the house being a place that was full of warmth and love. The sky is endless and impossibly far away, pinpricked with tiny stars. When I stand in the dark where the front lawn used to be and close my eyes, I can still feel our old house reaching its arms around me, and I breathe in time to its memory.